Well, greetings, welcome to The Dividing Line. My name is James White, coming to you from a blustery Las Vegas, Nevada. And today is a family integrated version of The Dividing Line, which means if you've ever been to a family integrated church, you learn to adjust to minor distractions and things like that, especially children. And generally not dogs, that might happen as well. There is one back there. In fact, I can just see her in the frame there. That's Penny, if you all want to say hi to Penny. Penny's back there in the corner. But I am in Las Vegas, Nevada. I'm not going to – it's sort of a secret location, so we won't give you any more information than that, because we're coming to you from the worldwide headquarters of Sheologians. And I got this feeling – because at some point, I forget what the context was, I said something to Summer about having her on the program. It was sort of like, yeah, Dad, we've had you on my program a bunch of times. You've never had me on yours before. And so I just got this feeling, this sense that maybe there was some pent-up animosity or something there. And I'm sort of like, you know, I have mentioned it a number of times, and I just wanted to make sure that, you know, you all got a good start based upon the quality of the material you're producing, things like that. So anyway, so I announced last week that, or last program on Monday, that if I managed to survive the trip up here, which I did, that we would be coming to you from up here. And so we have really high tech stuff here. It's called a laptop on a desk. Very high tech. So watch as I move the camera. Ah, there you go. And
fancy.
And there's Penny.
There's my dog.
there's the dog, and she doesn't care about any of this. But coming to you from I'm gonna say it's approximately a 5-hour trip, but it's less for other people, but I just won't tell the Nevada State Troopers that you can make it in considerably less time than I do.
It takes me a solid 5 hours.
Okay, all right.
For the record,
okay,
because right, I good. Stop a lot.
Well, oh, and by the way, the place we both stop in
Wikiup. Yes,
I mentioned you to them. I said my daughter comes down like every 2 weeks and uh-huh. always stops here.
They know
and,
me,
and they're like, well, thank you very much. This is a family business. So say thank you for us, you know. And
I like that town.
I wouldn't call that a town.
It's cute.
No.
And it's quaint. It's
that particular gas station is.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's anything else there.
I just like that they have – I actually don't know what I like about the place.
They do have really good honey there.
They sell honey.
They sell
I
honey.
Buy honey for the kids.
Yep,
I don't know.
Yep.
I just like it there.
So if you're ever on State Route, that's 93 there, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's 93. We're on State Route 93 in Arizona, and you hit Wikia.
Yeah.
Now you have to be careful because you go straight through without even noticing it.
It's not true. You have to slow down to 45 miles an hour. They stop you.
This is true. But it's on the west side of – west side of that? No.
Yes. Side. West side. It's the west side.
Anyways, it's a nice place. They got a little restaurant there, which I've never eaten at.
I would never eat at the restaurant. Actually,
I'm sure it's a fine restaurant. Anyways, why are we talking about that? Every 2 weeks, Summer drives all the way down to Phoenix, Arizona. It's Tempe.
Tempe, yes.
Tempe, to the Apologia Studios,
yep.
Where she and Joy record Sheologians. And so that started in September of 2016.
Yep. 3 years in September.
It's coming up. Well, that was just before President Trump was elected. Think there's any connection? Okay, we won't
it
go there.
Helped my show quite a bit.
Really?
His election, yes. Gave me so many things to talk about.
Oh, I bet so. Well, yeah, there's been a lot of development since there. No choice about
yeah.
it. But anyway, since we're going to be doing it from the home here, I thought it would be wise initially to take care of the child issue. because now Janie, I don't think really cares one way or the other, but the older kids have seen The Dividing Line on the TV screen a
yeah.
number of times.
They know.
And Clementine has been on the program. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, I think Cadence's right ear was on the program a few weeks ago with Clementine, if I recall correctly.
They were in the doghouse outside, which was a really horrifying moment for me as a mother.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's where
like,
they were?
I left, and they like went outside and hung out in the doghouse. I was just like...
It was snowing and we wanted to play out there.
Well, okay. All right. I understand. Anyways, so we thought the best way to do this would be just to have each of the kids say hello, and then they can go do something else once the excitement wears off because they've now been on the program. So we thought we'd start with the youngest.
Janny.
So Janny.
I don't know if she's going to play along. JJ, come here. You want to say hi?
Come here, Janny.
I don't know. She's going to be...
Hi.
Okay.
Danny, do you want to come here for a second so I can hold you just for a second? Okay.
And she's bringing a pinball machine.
She's bringing her pinball machine.
I mean, just naturally.
Okay, yes, there's a pinball machine. So here, let me hold you a second. So this is Janny, our youngest.
Look, that's
see,
you.
See, there you are. And we're on the dividing line right now. Isn't that cool?
Yeah. Hey, shoes off.
Yeah, that's pretty good. No, you don't want to say shoes off because, you don't worry about that, do you? So do you want to say hi, everybody?
Hi,
very good, very good.
Good job, Janny.
There's your pinball machine. All right. Yeah, she'll look at this years from now and go, wow, I was the star. But then, of course, the next in line would be Clementine. And Clementine has been on, come on over, honey. You can stand between mommy and me. There you go. Clementine was on the program before. And what'd you say?
Shoes off.
So are you on a jungle gym right now? Is that what you're doing, standing between the...
Yay!
And the kids were looking at themselves in the in the screen before. But so now do you remember recording your debate with Pastor Jeff?
Oh, yeah. And I was like, he had a beard. And I was like, you don't have a chin.
No, you said, do you have a chin? And then do you remember what he asked you about? He asked you about Frozen, and he kept messing all the words up to Frozen, and you kept correcting it and stuff like that. Yeah, so you like Pastor Jeff?
Kind of.
Sorry about that, Jeff. It's been a while. That's all we can say. So, well, are you excited to be on the program?
I don't know.
Do you like when Punkle comes up to visit?
I don't know.
Do you like when I take you out to Olive Garden?
I don't know.
Harry, I told you she's going to be weird.
Well, thank you, Clementine, for not knowing anything at all. Okay, she doesn't know. So then we have the poor guy.
He's not poor. He's very rich.
The poor guy that has to put up with three sisters. And that means he has the patience. I was going to say of Job, but Job is a little more patient. So, and we happen to be wearing plaid together today. So this is Waylon. Come on, Waylon. So, all right. So you're the guy that has the job of protecting all the girls, right? Yeah.
Like last night.
You scared them.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I snuck into the girls' room last night and scared Clementine half to death. And here comes Waylon to protect the gals. So, is it really that bad having three sisters? I mean,
it's okay.
Duh.
He's good at it.
Yes, you're doing a good job. And that shirt looks familiar.
You bought it.
That's why it looks familiar. I saw you once. When did your dad shave your head? Remember?
No, it was last fall.
Yeah. And I was like, hey, as long as you can grow it, kid, keep growing it. Because someday it may all go away.
I know. My nana caught it.
Okay, she cut it for you? Okay, good, good. Well, this is Waylon, and Waylon is the young man of the family. So the girls need to have a good young man. Thank you, son. Thank you for being here. So that's three of the four that Summer is teaching right now. And so the last is our oldest. So let's have Cadence come over. Now, of course, Cadence, let me ask you a question. when I was your age, if my mom or dad said, James Robert, I knew I was in trouble. So when your parents want to, are going to, you're going to be in trouble. How do they call you? What do they call you?
Cadence, Jane.
They
call me Cadence.
Yeah, they normally call you Kate or Katie, right?
Yeah.
So do they ever, does, would Cadence necessarily mean you were in trouble, or is it just... You're in trouble? Okay, all right. I just wonder if, you know, because Clem is Clem, but do you, if she gets in trouble, is she Clementine? I don't know.
She's probably Clem. My mom usually calls me Clementine, and Eric sometimes calls me Clem.
Okay, so.
Yeah, I don't think we really do that.
Don't really do that?
No.
That's interesting. Okay, all right. So you have to, it's tough being the oldest. Because you have to give an example for the others, and obviously people expect you to, I don't know, help out with the others. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
A good thing.
It's a good thing. Of course it is. Of course it's a good thing. In fact, I remember early on when I first visited up here, I remember Jenny needed to have her diaper changed, and you dived right in there and got the stuff and helped out. So and you're gonna have two numbers in your age before long, huh? Heading into the teen years before long. Oh goodness. And notice the shirt here. See the shirt, folks? See what that is? Those are the three cages on the Munster. Where would she have gotten a shirt like that?
No one knows.
Nobody knows.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
Keep doing a good job. Thank you very much, Cadence. Keep these guys. Can you do that? All right. Thanks. All right, guys. There, I see Eric asking you all to go in there. So we'll catch y'all later.
There they are.
I bet you they keep you busy, huh?
Super busy.
And do you get any illustrations for theologians from life experiences?
Yeah. It's funny when Kate will listen to Sheologian sometimes, and she'll be like, "You say that to me all the time." Yeah, and I'm like, yes, I do.
Well, she was sitting next to me last night. I started talking to her about stuff, and she says, "Yeah, Mom says that all the time."
Yeah. So. Oh, man. I feel like I have like 20 existential conversations a day with the kids because homeschooling just... That's what you have to do.
Well, they want to have those conversations, and they really can't have them in a public school. They end up having them with people that are equally immature with themselves.
Yes.
In that context, or with a wild-eyed leftist teacher who's had 20 of those conversations already today with other kids as it is. So
That's true.
There you go. Drives like I do. I'm just now looking at Rich's notes here.
He's saying I drive like him, which means responsible and well.
Oh, I see. Obviously. I see. Oh, yes.
That's okay. That was
back at the issue of how long it takes to get to Phoenix.
Yeah.
Okay. The text thing is sometimes hard to follow. So, I you know, when I listen to Sheologians, I think back to how that all started. And I asked you a little while ago if you were planning on paying Pastor Luke any royalties.
No. he gets his payment in fame.
Oh, well, then he needs to be made famous, because have you ever...
Yes. And we invited him on the show, and we acknowledged that. Okay. Right. So Pastor Luke is the one who named the show, and he does that weird scream in the beginning.
So it would have been better... You're thankful that I didn't start the program off by saying Sheologians means that you all think that God is a female.
Right.
And because I've seen that.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times have you had to explain Sheologians?
So many in the beginning. And it was horrifying when I went to that conference in DC, because I was... Sheologians is a pun. I don't like it. Like, the reason that the show is named Sheologians was because I was just like, they were like, well, what should we title the show? And I was like, I don't know. I'm bad at titles.
Everybody who asks me for a sermon title, I go,
I don't like
why?
Titles. I don't like titling things. No. I did not get Adam's job in the garden. I was not supposed to name anything. So
it would be animal A, animal B, animal C.
It's not my job. And so I was just like, you guys figure it out and you guys do that. And they were like, Sheologians. And I was like, whatever, this is my hobby. I don't really care.
But now it's your job.
And now it's my job. And, you know, I'm consistently higher on the iTunes charts than you. And I have to live with the name. And so anyway, back to the conference. So when we went to the conference, I was like meeting these, you know, we're in DC and I'm meeting these like, I think I met like a congressman and like these journalists and people who just, they live in this world I don't understand. And so they're trying to understand, well, why are you speaking at this conference? Who are you? And I was like, do I really have to tell people
the name of the program that I do?
I'm a Sheologian. Like, how do you like introduce yourself? So it's this pun that I just have to like really embrace and
well, and you guys do, because you, every time you do, I was trying to think of some way of putting the her in something.
And we just have to keep it going at this point.
It's
painful. Just, it just is what it is. And people think it's funny. And
Do you ever do she or just always her?
It's she and or her.
Oh, okay.
And I gave up trying to, we opened the show with like, we're here to put the she in or her. And it's impossible. Like, I have gone through all of the words that make sense. So I think on this week's show, we're talking about Christian liberty. So I said, we're here to put the her in liberty. It's just bad.
Yeah,
and you guys just have to get on board with it. Like, that's
that's how it is. Notice that Rich took offense there. He said, we don't do iTunes.
Oh, so you guys are on iTunes. And you guys are on iTunes.
That's not our podcast.
Well, it's not. I know. Yeah, it's so fine. It's fine. You don't have to be offended. It's fine.
Just a little bit of competition
just
going
reality.
On.
Reality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, not on purpose. So yeah, okay. So you have to explain that. And so once you get past the name, then how do you explain what it is that you focus on? I mean, what do you focus on? I mean, okay. You've talked about a bunch of stuff, right?
Yeah.
There's sort of a focus, isn't there?
Yes. So we do this weird thing that we didn't realize we were doing. And I think it's taken me 2.5 years to pick up that this is what we're doing. But so Joy is my co-host, and she's also a co-host on Apologia Radio, and she works for Apologia Studios. And when we started, you know, we'd be like, well, what are we going to talk about this week? And we still do that. But I think what we have really started, what we realized we were doing is we were paying attention to what women were talking about, like what is going on with women that we think would be worthwhile to address. So I think when we first started, you know, some of the things we talked about were just who we are, why we're confessional, things like that. And then one day we realized that if both of us weren't Christians, we would probably be feminists.
Ooh.
And so we were like, let's talk about that. Like, if we weren't believers, we would totally be feminists. And so we did this 4-part series on feminism. And that month that we released those was the first Women's March. And so when we released those episodes and when I went to the Women's March and interviewed people and put that video out, that video went viral and those episodes were doing well. And so that's really kind of when we discovered, like, okay, if we really talk about issues that are facing women, issues that we know that we're facing, and then try to put them through a biblical lens, that people just find that helpful. And so we've had to make a lot of decisions over the last couple of years about whether or not we would tackle a topic that would make people not like us potentially. And it was just never really a question because I learned from you. And because Joy is who she is, we're just like, we've just been tackling things that, you know, a lot of times the people that listen to us, a lot of the feedback that we get is like, your conversation made me really uncomfortable and it really convicted me. And thank you.
Yeah.
So like, that's kind of our audience. Like I'm not out to just like lay conviction down, but I think, you know, soft teaching makes hard hearts and we don't want to be hard-hearted people. So,
or as someone else I know said, sermonettes make for Christianettes.
Who said that?
Jim Burrows.
I like that. Okay.
Yeah. Sermonettes make for Christianettes.
He must have sat through a Jeff Durbin sermon. Because those are long. Those are not sermonettes.
No, they're not sermonettes.
Those are really long.
No, this is actually after a shorter sermon from Pastor Fry.
Okay.
And he said, now remember, sermonettes make for Christianettes.
Tough audience. Tough crowd.
Yeah. You know, I've been preaching at Apologia a bit, and I do tend to be a little bit shorter than, than Jeff.
The Durbin sermons are notorious for their length.
Uh-huh.
And their awesomeness.
Oh.
I know you're listening.
Well, I saw a Jeff Durbin thing pop up in the corner there, so he may be out there lurking. I don't know. He could WhatsApp me if he's actually paying attention
right.
Watching any of this.
Right.
And so we have to be careful. You just redid your series on feminism
mm-hmm.
Because you had had just so much more experience with it since then? Or?
Well, I wasn't kidding when I said the election of Donald Trump just gave us so much material. I mean, here's Jeff.
Watch what you say about me.
Yeah, so I wasn't. We just had Jeff on the show. That was probably one of my favorite episodes.
That's
but surprise, it was an hour and 20 minutes. But it was great.
Yeah. You had somebody else on recently. You actually had to do two parts.
I know.
Right.
I know. We decided to redo the episodes on feminism, not really redo, but kind of, you know, we both knew that if we had done the feminism series now, it would be different, not just because we are used to podcasting together now, but because so much has happened since, Trump was elected and so much has happened within feminism. So when we originally did the feminism episodes, if you just want to look purely at statistics, feminism was really dying. I think only like 38% of women back then, which was only a couple years ago, would have identified as feminists, and that's changing. And I think it's particularly changing among Christians because of the Me Too movement. And so we just decided this is something not only would we have done, we would do differently, but there's just a lot more to say. So we did that again in January, and we planned on doing it the whole month of January. And then I got Nancy Piercy to come on the show, which was just like a moment of that was it for me. I was like, I can just quit now.
Quit now. It wasn't when you had Michael Kruger or Jason Lyle.
Love you guys.
It was
Nancy Piercy. I mean, and you know, so the work that she's doing, the book that she put out last year, Love Thy Body, had really become a textbook for us. Because when, you know, she's a student of Schaefer, and our whole argument against feminism was that you don't need feminism because we have everything we need in scripture to give women their value and worth, that your value and worth can only really be rooted in being made in the image of God. And so her book kind of said all of that too. And it was just kind of like this big like light bulb for us, and the way that she put everything in her book. And so, yeah, having Nancy Piercy on to kick off 2019 was just goals.
But you gotta keep working toward, you know, there's gotta be something exciting out there yet you want to do. Who else do you want to have on? Camille Paglia.
I'd love to talk to Camille. She's one of my favorite atheists. Who's on my list? I mean, I have Rosaria Butterfield on twice, and that was incredible.
Can't think of anybody else, huh?
I mean, you know, we had Tom Askell on, and he's really become, sorry about my phone. Tom Askell is just, having him on was incredible. That's another podcast I'd recommend you guys listen to. He does a podcast with Jared Longshore that's incredible. I don't know. I'm so happy.
I'm so satisfied.
I'm trying not to not be ambitious, but I just feel like wow, I've really had a lot of the people on that that really just are heroes in the faith. I mean,
who else? So most of your programs are not with guests, though.
No. We're not a guest show. I mean, most people, they listen because they like the dynamic that Joy and I have. Right. And so that's just kind of what people say they listen for. And if you hate us, you, it's because you hate our dynamic and also that we step on all of your toes. So I feel fine with.
So you've pretty much just given up on getting into the social justice group and being favorites amongst them.
Oh man.
And this is the feminists, the LGBTQ, the social justice folks.
We've lost a lot of friends.
How can you have any audience at all?
We've lost a lot of friends. I think that the majority of Christians who are trying to be faithful, they don't really, you know, what I hear a lot is I would never hear any of this stuff if I didn't get online. So I wouldn't be hearing about these issues if it wasn't for social media. So I think a lot of the people who are just faithfully attending their churches every week and they're faithful part of their churches, a lot of them aren't hearing this stuff yet. So it's just not really on their radar. The reason I think it's worthwhile to talk about is because I don't think that's going to be true for much longer.
But but unless they're homeschooling their kids
right.
are hearing it.
They're
getting it crammed down their throats.
Sure. And I think that people just aren't really prepared for that. I'm sorry about my phone. I need to go turn that off. I totally forgot about my phone. Yeah, their kids are hearing about it, but your kids don't really, I mean, how does a kid explain, you know, how are they going to explain it to you?
But you can't filter it out if you don't know what it is.
Right. So that's why we talk about it, is that it's not going to be true much longer that you can't know what this is. And that's why, I mean, we started talking about intersectionality back in 2017. And not because we had been, you know, going to schools and hearing about it, but because essentially, if you have your pulse, I think, on what's going on in women's groups, then you're going to know what's coming up in the cultural landscape. Like women are the consumers and women are the ones who are really pushing intersectionality. So long before intersectionality became this thing that you just have to accept, I saw it crumbling like circles of people around me. Mm. And so I was like, we have to talk about this. And obviously Joy was right on board because she saw it too. And I was just like, this is huge. This is what is going to keep happening. Like, this is not going to be an isolated incident, because I really was watching so many circles of groups dissolving into just hatred for each other. And it was, they were all women. And so
women are mean to women.
Oh, women are horrible. No one's meaner to women than other women.
I've talked about that with your mother many, many times. I'm like, man, guys are so much nicer to women.
They're just so much nicer. I don't know what it is. So that was something we decided to talk about a long time ago, and kind of I wanted to make it my business to really understand what intersectionality was, because I was
But you don't. I read it.
Yeah, I know.
But you don't.
I know. But I do. So that's just all there is to it. I mean, intersectionality is a religion. And so if you don't buy into the religion, then you are an apostate, you're a heretic, just get out. And so, yeah, that was.
So if you get an intersectionality, are you also woke?
Yeah.
Okay.
You can't be woke unless you are a part of that religion. Right. So it really was driven from a place of Joy and I totally recognize that without Christ, we would totally buy all of this.
But your intersectionality would eventually divide you two.
Yeah, eventually. I mean, it's just true. But I mean, if you think about it, I tried to talk about this before, that intersectionality among friends is like never going to be a good thing. Because I remember, you know, Joy sharing that, like, as a single woman, you know, her experience, if she elevated her experience of being single, it would be really hard to relate to all of her friends who were married and having kids. And that was something that she wanted. But that's not what was happening. And so it's just interesting how these ideas, like, they really are tearing friends apart, because when you have this lens of like your experience being how you have to translate the world, like the end of that is just resentment. And so that was one reason why we were like, we have to talk about this. And it's not because we're not interested in hearing about other people's experience, but I think we all know within our own sinful hearts that when your experience becomes how you have to translate everything else in the world, all you can be is bitter. Like, that's all you can be.
Didn't you just describe the political process in the United States today?
Yeah, for sure.
Identity politics. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure.
Which has led to the most divided, mm-hmm. non-functional form of government we've ever seen.
Yeah.
And it seems to have the same impact in the church.
Yeah, too. It does have the same impact in the church. And I'm really thankful. I had a moment, and this is really just, are you ready? This is too personal. We're going there. I had a moment with a friend who, like, I'm so glad she called me out because, and it had nothing to do with intersectionality, but it was one of them. I was living out one of the main tenets of intersectionality, which was my experience, how I'm feeling, this thing I'm experiencing is it. Like, this is the only way I can translate anything. And our friendship was suffering because I was basically telling her, like, you don't understand how hard I have it. You just can't understand. And I love her so much because she was just like, I think you need to pray because I think that you are really focusing on yourself too much right now. And I love you and I'm here for you. And I don't think you can hear how you sound. And I need you to think about it. And I was like, okay. And I did. And I was just like, this girl, you know, and this is what I'm getting at is that this person would have had no idea what intersectionality was. She had no idea what was going on in the world, but because she's just this faithful woman in a church who knows scripture, she was able to give me wisdom, call me to repentance in a biblical way. And it brought me out of that. And I was just like, this is what we need in our churches. Like we need people in our churches who are competent to counsel each other, like we're supposed to be, based on biblical truth. It doesn't matter about your social location and your gender and all of these things. Like the person who knows scripture is the person who's competent to counsel you, whether or not they've experienced what you've experienced. And that was just a really eye-opening moment for me. I mean, I was just being a selfish brat. But the fact that she had scripture and was able to bring that to me in a way that was going to change how I was viewing my situation, my experience, and so that I could view it, not just change it and make it better, but make it biblical. That's what we need to be able to do in our churches. We need to be able to do more than just recognize ideology that's bad, but also, well, what's the truth here? And so that's our audience. That's who we're speaking to. That's who we want to speak to. I'm really not interested in winning some, like, you know, I'm active on social media, but that's not like where my heart is. I just did a whole episode talking about how, I think if you're active on social media as a woman and your house is falling apart around you and you're not really serving in your first ministry, that you're fighting for Satan's team, but that's because that's what 1 Timothy says about you, not me. And so I'm really not, as much as I love social media and I want to use social media for good, like I really believe that getting women to be in the word, manage their households, so view themselves rightly in light of scripture, like those are the women that I want to talk to every week. So
if you were being a selfish brat, then I guess that means your parents failed.
I mean, everyone's a selfish brat all the time. And you need to realize when you're being a selfish brat.
Just thought I'd go ahead.
No.
Before someone starts writing an article that will appear on a certain website.
Yeah. Well, I think
that will happen.
I think every single day, I think we would all be so much better off if every time we were being selfish brats, we realized it and preached the gospel to ourselves. Like, show me one person who doesn't have a bratty thought during the day. Like, it's just, yes. We all do it.
Yeah. So you've already mentioned, you know, it's not like you have grand plans to take over the entire podcasting universe.
No.
and wipe out everybody else's audience, even though you did make that iTunes comment in passing.
Hey, when you win at something, just enjoy it.
Okay, I guess we're going to have to break out Tic Tac Tower, everybody.
Yes, see how that please. Happens.
Yes, let's play Tic Tac Tower. Yes. Oh, yes.
No one else in this house can beat me.
Oh, that sounds like a challenge.
It is.
All right.
Marcus. We're keep popping out of the camera, Rich said.
Oh, well, I haven't done that yet.
You
so
too.
That's out of the camera.
You're not even the same state and you're going to find a way to argue with them.
Yes. Well, yes, we will find a way to argue. That's sort of how the dividing line works. So that's how it works. Anyway,
yeah.
So you're not trying to do that. And so it's not like you have a 5 or 10 year plan.
No.
It's basically 2020 is going to be fascinating.
Yes.
Politically, that's going to raise all sorts of issues.
Yeah.
And that seemingly is going to result in all sorts of stuff within the church. Mm-hmm. I mean, the amount of change I have seen. I mean, the program we did on the Shepherd's Conference Q&A was huge.
I had people in my church that don't normally listen to the show that tuned in for that.
Yeah. And interestingly enough, I now have more background information on that than I did then. But the point is that I think there were a lot of people in that Q&A that had no idea that these kinds of fault lines existed. And all of a sudden they're going,
how is that possible?
Believe me, it is possible. People who have assumed that every person on that stage, they're all lockstep together, and then discover that that's not the case, that can be very troubling to people and very disconcerting, disorienting to people.
Sure.
And I'm having to talk about things in the program I've never thought I would ever have to talk about.
I know.
I mean, I still talk about the old stuff. We still talk about Mormonism, but funny, now when I talk about Mormonism, it's how much it's changing.
Yeah.
It's not so much focusing on the King Follett discourse, but the 12 apostles and the first presidency just met with the Pope in Rome all dedicated to the Roman temple. It's just like,
and a lot of the Mormons that I know are very pro LGBT, which is not how it used to be.
That has left me stunned. Mm-hmm. I've talked with a few Mormons who are saddened by what they're seeing happening in their own church.
Yeah.
And who've been honest enough to say, I don't get that either.
Because
I mentioned that to the young man that Jeff and I did the discussion with at Apologia.
Mm-hmm.
And he ended up being the head of the Young Democrats at BYU.
Yeah.
So here you have someone, I'm like, but your God is gendered. I mean, your God is literally a gendered male that has billions of spiritual offspring, which means he is engaged in sexual acts billions of times. So it's sort of hard for me to understand how you can buy into the gender fluid spectrum type argumentation.
I mean, you just have to anymore. And I think so. The people I know who are saying that are also for polygamy. And so essentially, if you're going to be for, the argument for that they're making for polygamy now isn't, I think, the historical Mormon argument, but it's the argument that love is love. And you can't.
There's a deep thought.
It's so incredible. And so love is love. And so how can you tell someone who they can or can't love? And that's really the best argument in 2019 for, gay marriage and all that. So.
Though the Salt Lake leadership is scared to death.
I mean, it's crumbling.
Of polygamy.
Yeah.
No, they're scared to death.
Well, they have to be.
Because they don't want it.
Right.
That's way too complex for them to handle. They don't want it, but they see it's coming anyways.
Yeah.
And the politics in Utah, fascinating stuff. But anyways, that's the stuff that I was dealing with for years and years and years and years. What was that young kid? Iron? Was his name Iron? Steel. Steel? Iron? Steel. Copper? Steel.
Steel.
Did you have sort of a little crush going on Steel?
I can't believe you're doing this in public. Oh my goodness.
We were going out to the Easter pageant. And they only did that like 2 or 3 years, I think, where they had the centurions, the Roman guards would come out
Not actual Roman guards. People dressed.
They were part
of the show.
But they were all over 6 feet.
Yes.
I don't think they chose a single one that was actually less than 6 feet.
So this is not a play for you guys who don't know.
The Mormon Easter pageant in Mesa, which currently is on hiatus. Did you know that? The Mesa Temple is being renovated and there is no Easter pageant.
Oh, that's weird.
And probably won't be for a couple years.
Yeah. Okay.
And so there's actually some discussion of not bringing it back even when the temple's done.
Did attendance go down?
Again, Mormonism's changing and how they want to try to reach people's changing, and putting on a pageant that makes us look like a bunch of Christians maybe not isn't the thing that they necessarily...
That was the highlight of my year. Going out to the
Easter pageant.
It was Christmas and the Easter pageant and handing out tracts to Mormons was my favorite.
But one year there was this, I forget what his name was. There was a big centurion that we had a conversation. We kept having conversations with him. They're very serious theological conversations. And he had a son that was running around out there, as most Mormon kids do.
Right.
I mean, they've been to the Easter pageant 47,000 times in their life. They don't care anymore. It's just a social event for them.
Mm-hmm.
But his name was Steele.
Yeah.
And did you two start talking? He was about your age, wasn't he?
Yeah, we were, I don't know, 11 or 12 or something. And, you know, our dads would always be talking. You guys would always be having these deep theological conversations. And so I made him cry once. Because, you know, I pulled that trick of how do you know, you know, they...
You know he has 7 kids.
Yeah, I know. Bless his heart. You know, how do they know Mormonism is true? Well, they prayed and they have the burning bosom or whatever. And so I made him read, I think it's Proverbs 28:26. The man who trusts in his heart is a fool. And he like read it and he cried and he ran away. But I think, you know, we talked every night he was out there.
And what did you do?
Out.
Go, yes.
Did you feel
badly for making the poor little Mormon boy cry?
I think I prayed for his conviction. I remember praying that he would leave Mormonism and I really wanted him to just, you know, get saved.
Right.
And so I thought, you know, smacking him over the head with a proverb was obviously the way to do that. I don't know who I learned it from.
I don't know either. I have no earthly idea. I take no responsibility. So, that was, so you looked surprised that they weren't doing that anymore.
Yeah.
I'm so old. I remember back when they had renovated it before, and mm-hmm. so to need to renovate it again means it's been a long time.
Yeah,
and of course those big temples like Mesa Temple, are the unusual ones now. I don't think you've seen the one up on Pinnacle Peak, mm-hmm. but it's basically a mega size war chapel. It's just so they're a lot cheaper to maintain.
Right.
So that's what they're doing these days. But anyways, Mormonism is changing.
Well,
and
it's not immune from the culture.
No, it is far more susceptible to the culture because of the lack of an objective truth mm-hmm. foundation mm-hmm. Within it. And so I don't know what Mormonism is going to look like 20 years from now, but the way it's changing, I wouldn't be surprised to see some LGBTQ prophet or something in the future. The way it's going, which is going to result in a split, and it's going to cause issues. There's no question about it. But anyway, all of that actually was a diversion from the fact that
I don't have a 5-year plan.
That you don't have a 5-year plan. I don't have a 5-year plan. I don't even have a 1-month plan for the dividing line because.
Right.
As things come up, as articles appear, as Shepherd's Conference Q&As take place, as as old mainline Christian publishers start cranking out all sorts of wild-eyed heresy and social justice stuff and everything else, you just have to be free to respond to this stuff.
Yeah.
And I've been saying that 2020 or 2024, one of the two, is going to bring a wild-eyed progressivist president to the United States. And especially if both houses of Congress end up going that direction as well, mm-hmm. we are going to see such rapid diminishment of our freedoms that I don't know what even our programs are going to look like or even how they're going to be available. Because everything that Apologia does, the studios, you know, so much of that is based upon the ease of access. You know, if people had to work hard to watch, there would be a lot fewer people watching.
Right.
And in the future, people are going to have to work a lot harder.
Yeah.
I think initially we're going to have to be doing stuff offshore and stuff like that, but it's still going to be sort of available, but you're going to have to be working hard to get it. And that means the audience goes down, the support goes down, things change. And I see that coming.
Yeah.
Now, of course, you and your brother like to refer to me as, what do you all like to refer to me as?
Debbie Downer.
That's right.
Yeah, you know, the difference, I've hung around, yes, I see, Rich is...
uploading files from McDonald's in the middle of nowhere to servers in Sweden. Thank you, Rich, we appreciate
it. We really do need a Rich cam.
We have a Rich cam.
I want it right now. I've hung around the post-millennials enough. I don't know what it is. I'm not saying I don't care, because I care. I care about religious freedom. Obviously, I want my show to keep happening. But I kind of just feel like I really wouldn't. I think we're a nation under judgment. And I think if we were a blot off the face of the earth, that I just wouldn't be surprised. I mean, the blood that we have on our hands is incredible. And I think... I mean, how long did democracies like this normally last? Now I sound you.
Yeah.
I'm totally fine with it, though. My point is...
And by the way...
I'm okay.
I had a conversation...
I'm okay with that.
I had a conversation with the bearded one about that. Because of the eschatological implications believing that we're under the judgment of God. And he agreed with me that even if you're a post-millennialist, that doesn't mean that any one culture or nation itself is going to be... getting better, and God has wiped out all sorts of cultures and nations before. So I just saw somebody on Twitter a few weeks ago saying, well, you go to Apologia now, so don't they think that everything's just getting better and better and better all the time? And it's like, no, that's not what they're saying. And and if God doesn't grant repentance to any one particular culture, then he has already wiped out entire nations since the coming of Christ. So obviously that's not
right.
That's not the
perspective. I'm just kind of in a good mood about it because
Rich is calling Hal Lindsey.
I don't know who that is.
Oh.
Who's Hal Lindsey?
Oh.
Am I supposed to know who Hal Lindsey is? somebody, anybody. I don't know who Hal Lindsey is.
He faints.
He's fainting.
Oh,
what did I do?
Honey, you just dated yourself. So the late great planet Earth. One of the biggest selling books in the 1970s. It was the book about, certainly, you know, Thief in the Night.
Sure.
The biggest VHS rental movie ever, A Thief in the Night. You haven't seen A Thief in the Night?
I don't know what that is.
Oh my goodness. I have failed completely. If you have not watched A Thief in the Night, you have not seen the nature of evangelical eschatology in the 1970s and 80s.
I don't want to see it.
Oh, yes,
it
you do.
Sounds terrible.
Oh, yes, you do. All you eschatologians fail. Eschatologians fail. Oh, believe me, when you see that lawnmower sitting there running because the rapture has taken place. You got to understand there in my generation, there are people in my generation that when I mention that they get a cold sweat because
scared of lawnmowers.
No, they would show that movie at retreats and stuff like at midnight. And they would literally, the people.
Christian horror movie.
It's a Christian movie about the rapture and then the 7 years of tribulation and what happens and
left behind.
Yes. Yes.
It's just left behind.
And you've been left behind. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. I cannot believe you have not seen that. You must get online and you must just simply for church history research purposes, if for nothing else, you have to watch.
It sounds terrible.
Oh, it is absolutely classic. It was, wow. Okay. So see, folks, see that I
grew up so sheltered, and it's your fault.
I obviously failed.
It's your fault.
That I didn't show my children Thief in the Night.
I remember, here's a funny story. I remember Grandma and Grandpa, your parents, had the Left Behind series.
Oh, and they would have shown.
No, let me tell my story.
So, they would have shown that movie over and over again.
I know. So one time I was bored and I went through the library and I started reading Left Behind. And I remember I was like, Grandpa, can I bring this home? And he was like, I don't think your dad should see that. And I was like, I don't know what's happening here. So I'm just going to leave this here, I guess. I guess.
Oh, man. Hal Lindsey. Oh, gosh.
Anyway, the whole point is I'm in a good mood about it because I just feel like whatever's going to happen is going to happen. And all
okay, sada theology.
Well, no, just like my only thing that I really want to make sure I do is give my kids a life that can hopefully handle the turbulence that's coming their way. Like
wow.
If anything,
where have I heard
so like
that
if anything
before?
Stresses me out, it's the fact that like I don't want to raise kids who can't handle any difficulty because I think they're going to have a lot of difficulty, like more than we can probably even foresee at the moment because we're bad prophets. And so my concern, you know, all that I'm really just worried about is, can I do that? Can I give them the foundation? Can I make sure I don't raise kids that look like the rest of this generation's kids? Because then they might survive and be able to build something out of the ashes. But really, I just feel like, I mean, 5-year plan, you know, Joy and I were talking about it a couple weekends ago when she's up here. It's like, we're just going to keep doing Sheologians as long as it makes sense. And as long as we feel like we're growing, not growing numbers wise, but, growing like in what we're doing. And then I'm just going to raise my kids and see what happens. And that's,
Rich suggested you will need to teach them how to camp if you want that.
Well, they have a dad. So no, I don't. Nope.
Learn that from your dad. If it comes to that, I'm just dying.
He's gonna have to keep
your
me
mom.
Alive.
Oh, okay. Yeah, your mom will be right with you on that. Like,
so
what you mean we have to leave the city? And
yeah.
But
you know, I'm just whatever. Yeah, que sera, I guess. Not really. Like, I would love the nation to repent. But as far as what I'm doing, what Joy and I are trying to do is we're just trying to push people to grow in faithfulness. And as long as we're growing in faithfulness, like, I'm going to a good place. Like, I've got hope. Like, I don't know what to tell you.
But the next 6 years, that takes us through 2025.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to be faced with some of the decisions that many of our brothers and sisters have already had to face in Europe.
Yeah.
For example, in Germany, you cannot homeschool.
Right.
So
that's
do you do?
Terrifying.
What if you're a Christian parent?
Right.
And you know that if it's not in California first, it'll be Oregon, Washington, New York, something like that, where they will ban that. And then it'll go to the Supreme Court. But eventually, it doesn't matter what the Supreme Court does, because all you have to do is, did you see the leftist activists going after Clinton? Not Hillary Clinton, but Chelsea Clinton.
Yeah.
Part of me wants to believe the left is just going to so eat itself,
right?
that it will self
just divide
just single people running around fighting each other, and that they won't have any. But but I don't think that's what's going to happen. But it's possible. The point is, those kinds of people are going to say no to homeschooling, mm-hmm. no to the hatred, no to the bigotry. You know, all this kind of stuff.
So much depth of thought.
You can't expect depth of thought from these folks. They don't know what depth of thought is. They've cut themselves off from history. So we're going to be asked to make a lot of decisions mm-hmm. as to what is compromise and what is not compromise and stuff over the next, I'd say, 6 years. And right now, with the way it's going, it's not looking good, given what we're seeing and people that we thought were right next to us, lockstep with us on things that are now...
They're not.
They've gone far, far away. And the social justice thing has brought a tremendous amount of division, as it was designed to do. That's its very nature, is to divide and have no possible way of reconciliation. That's the funny thing, is that we seek racial reconciliation. However, our system does not have any way of actually producing it. So that means it's a constant searching for it, and that's a means of division.
Right.
That's gonna continue on.
I read a tweet. Yeah, I read a tweet today that said exactly that you'll never reach allyship. It's an ongoing, you're always going to have to admit your wrongness, and there's really reconciliation is essentially not possible. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have been saying what you're saying, and I think the response is no, that's not true. But then it's like, well, if you look at what's out there, if you look at what the people in academia are saying, if you just read Twitter for a little bit and get a pulse on the conversation, like, it's very clear that you can never repent enough for your whiteness. You can never really be an ally. You're just going to mess up being an ally over and over and over. Like, you're never going to arrive. Like, reconciliation is actually not possible. So
that's not the goal. That's not the goal. And it's sad to see people. I've seen so many people who were right with us and they're in fellowship with us. And now they can't say our names without spitting.
Yeah.
And where did it all come from? It came from a slow embracing of what sounded good until once you buy the whole thing, then you realize it's a poison pill situation.
Yeah. I mean, between that and the Me Too movement, I've lost a lot of friends. And that it is what it is. I hate it, but I think we can be at peace as long as we are sticking to biblical principles. Like, that's just all. The point isn't to keep friends. It's to be at peace with all men as long as it's up to you. And in these situations, like, sometimes it's really just not up to you. Mm. You can either be a coward and kowtow, which is, I think, cowardly and just something that I can't do, and keep your friends. But honestly, if that's what they're demanding of you, that you agree to all this other stuff, let me show you the door.
Or don't let the door hit you on the way out. That's somebody else who came up
with
that.
It just is what it is.
So, folks, though very few people are actually watching this on iTunes because we're so small, but you can look up Sheologians. Yeah. If you happen to be in that very small number of people who watch this program that already didn't do that, and subscribe and catch some of Joy's comments. And I'm just very thankful, Summer, that you've allowed me to come on and to help.
You're welcome. It helped grow your platform. Yeah, you needed it.
Right.
Your ratings among millennials was just horrible.
That's true.
And I
do seem to reach out to only a much older demographic that's can barely use computers anyway. So yeah.
I didn't say that. You didn't hear that from me.
There you go. All right. Well, folks, there you are from Las Vegas. I'm going off the top of my head, I'm pretty certain that I leave toward the end of next week for the South Texas Bible Conference. So there'll probably be some sort of a shift of the programs earlier in the week so that we can get them in. And then I'll be with Justin Peters down in South Texas. And the weekend after that is up in, Morgan Hill, south of San Jose.
Does someone know where he's going?
It's on the website. I show up, go teach this stuff here. And okay, cool. That's what I'll do. And then a few weeks after that, we're talking London twice and the Netherlands and stuff like that. See,
aren't you fancy?
It has nothing to do with iTunes, but I so.
Can someone invite me to London?
In the East London Mosque. yeah. Summer really wants to be invited to London.
My dream.
So maybe, you know, there's some churches there. And it could happen.
I just want to go to London. Sometimes I just lay in bed and think about it.
Yeah, I've tried
just
to buy.
Kidding. I don't have that kind of time.
How long have I been buying you? You know, Mind the Gap stuff.
I know. And, I want all the London things. London I want stuff. Mind the Gap t-shirts. I want all the London.
But
things.
You'd rather ride the tube than have.
Yes. I want to go to the Eye, and I want to do all those things.
Yeah,
that's my dream.
It's just down the road. Tell him he's staying there. But anyways, I won't mention it. Anyhow, so next week.
This is why I am the way I am.
Yep, that's sort of how it works. Oh, and hi, Jeff. How you doing? You want to say hi to Jeff? Jeff,
hey, Pastor Jeff. Hey, man.
Hey, Pastor Jeff. Do you have a chin?
Clementine always, if you guys listen to Jeff, he never says hi. He says, hey, man. And so whenever Clementine does her Jeff impression, she goes, hey, man. And I told him about it. And he was like, oh, that's so true. Like, he hadn't realized that about himself. But Clementine had picked up on it. So, hey, man, is Pastor Jeff's.
Hey, man.
You should, like, trademark that.
Hey, man. Oh, or Theology Matters, but Moeller stole that from me. So, anyway, we can keep going on here forever, but I'm sure Rich has important stuff to be doing back there.
He's already stopped. This isn't even on anymore. He's just like, they're done. They're just done. This is embarrassing.
Okay, thanks for watching, everybody. We'll see you next time. God bless. Bye.
Bye.
Just a second. Waiting to sign the show out.